Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Radio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 11:03 a.m. and that is on July 4th. And the U.S. markets are closed today, so I'm recording a little bit earlier. When we look at the Australian market, it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner. Wasn't quite able to hold all of the gain, but attempting at least to put in a higher reaction low. But what I found interesting is the constituents of the better performers. So the leading advancer was an immuno-oncology company, ImmunoGen. And then we had a coal company. So then we had Block, which is the new name for Square. So it's also maintaining this Australian listing. It was up 5%. So that's a pretty impressive move. And then we had a sparkling, or I guess a sprinkling of some of those gold miners, Santa Barbara, Perseus, and Northern Star. So I think these are rather interesting developments because first we can think about immuno-oncology. And we've had a really almost cataclysmic decline in some of these shares. It's not just in Australia, it's everywhere. There's been huge commonality right across the sector. Then, if we just strip out the advance that we had then, well, we can see that there was a good size move in 2016 and 17 as well, where the price went from about 10 cents to 4 cents, or excuse me, 1 cent to 4 cents. Then just contrast that with the similar performance we had, for example, in Clovis Oncology, where it fell by 99% between the peak in 2017 and the rebound that we've started to see quite recently. When we think about more of these companies, I'm going to post a fairly large number of these very small companies in comment of the day today. They've really been completely off the radar, but they are starting to move. And this is particularly evident on the log scale charts. So we've seen a number of doubles occur in just the last couple of weeks. And part of the reason for that is because we're seeing more interest in the oncology sector. It's a high growth sector within the pharmaceuticals market. And the Loncar immunotherapy ETF is, well, showing signs at least of bottoming. And it was down 65%. But perhaps more important than all of this is that we've had precious little in the way of clear evidence of support building from most of the high growth, high tech sector over the course of the last while. If we look, for example, at the ARK Innovation ETF, it's still not breaking up to new recovery highs. There's some evidence of steadying, but we're not seeing relative strength appear. So investors are getting more picky. And this is the time to pay attention to things that are exhibiting relative strength. Because when we've had a significant decline, and we have had a significant decline, particularly in the innovation sector, then people will be thinking on the one hand, how could I possibly buy this? It's already down 80%, 90%, 99%. Perhaps the company's going to go bust. But if we start seeing relative strength, where these companies start going up in absolute and relative terms, then somebody's buying them, and they're buying them for a reason. You don't buy something that's down 90% for no reason. So therefore, there has to be a background fundamental reason. Well, the first, of course, is that oncology is a high growth market. With the aging of the population, particularly in wealthy developed nations, the incidence of cancer is likely to increase, and therefore the market for oncology drugs will also increase. And these types of solution, they're not universally curing cancer, but we're seeing more vaccines for cancers evolve. We're seeing more tailored treatments evolve. Now, that doesn't mean that it's a one size fits all. The promise back in 2016 and 17 was that it would be a one-size-fits-all, and that did not come to fruition. Then we're in an environment where we have high interest rates, tight financial conditions, and yet we're starting to see these companies turning around. Therefore, they are starting to be appreciated on their individual merits. So it's an interesting sector to pay attention to. Now, of course, we can also think about the oil market because Brent crude is still rising. I think it's important to look at the front month contract because we've got such a wide backwardation that we're seeing these steps in the chart on the continuation. And if we look at the September contract, there is still a clear sequence of higher reaction lows. It did pull back from the test of the March peak. The higher reaction lows remain intact. There is a clear trend evident, and the price is now firming from $110. Until we see clear evidence of oil rolling over, then it's going to act as a fundamental support for energy type companies. So we can then think about BP and Shell. They're both bouncing from the region of their respective 200-day moving averages. And in fact, from BP's example, it's also bouncing from the 1,000-day moving average. Then natural gas prices in Europe are ramping higher. So UK prices were up in a dynamic manner in here today, and European prices are also continuing to advance. So this problem is not going away. Now, we've seen, for example, that Iran is cutting the price of its oil exports to China, and Russia is now the biggest export of oil to China. So a lot of the major suppliers are competing for the Chinese market. That is music to the ears of the Chinese administration. They have lots of people trying to sell and compete for their market, and therefore we're starting to see discounting. And that doesn't gel at all with what we're seeing in Europe, where natural gas prices are ramping higher. So there is a clear arbitrage evolving between prices in Europe and prices everywhere outside of the embargo on Russian oil. And that kind of differential isn't sustainable in the long term. So either prices will come down internationally, or Europe is going to have to significantly economize, and there's going to have to be a concerted effort to enhance electricity production and securing oil supplies from just about anywhere else they can get it. And even then, we're still in a very tight, difficult environment as long as sanctions are still being imposed on Russia. And Russia is making gains in Ukraine. They took over another city in Luhansk in here today. So this war in Ukraine isn't about to end anytime soon. So then, or at least perhaps, I think maybe the optimism is that they'll stop at Donetsk and Luhansk, and they won't be encouraged to go any further. But of course, one of the reasons why Russia invaded in the first place is because they feel vulnerable, and they don't have a defensible, easily defensible border. So they might really wish to push forward until they hit a mountain range. Now, of course, that's not going to be easy, and it's not going to happen overnight, but it does suggest that Russia's security is top of mind for their administration, and they're not particularly worried about near-term difficulties for the economy, provided the contraction is reasonably sized. They seem certainly willing to impose some hardship on Russia. But then the Russian people, the question is how much hardship? And so far, at least, the Russian economy seems to be chugging along. Now, when we then think about how are equity markets performing, well, the FTSE 100 was in positive territory today, and it was led higher by the energy and the commodities sector. But We've been in a very volatile environment, but so far at least it is holding the higher reaction low. So we're starting to see some support building coming through. Then the dollar is still at the upper side of its range relative to or on the dollar index, and the pound is back testing this 120 area. Now it's attempting to build support, and it's the lower side of the range. So it's really more a question of whether the Bank of England is going to be able to raise interest rates, or will the Federal Reserve have to stop raising interest rates sooner rather than later? When we think about the bond market in the UK, well, yields have been rising, and they haven't been rising as fast as they have everywhere else, but now they're also pausing, just like everywhere else. So we've had a significant move up from 0 to 2.5%, and fears about inflation have been rampant. And this 2.5 to our 2.75 area is right around where the yield peaked back in 2015, or 2014, excuse me, 2013-14. Now, we've clearly broken the downtrend, but it's exceptionally overbought. Now, it's still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. So, as long as that 2% level is holding, then I think investors are going to be willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the trend. If 2% is taken out, then a reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average will probably be the base case. Having broken the downtrend, it's more likely than not that we're going to have higher yields for longer. Now that's going to act as a headwind for the UK economy, and that's obviously going to be challenging. So more concerted efforts to try and mitigate some of the energy pressures will obviously be in the pipeline. And this is going to be a universal condition for all of Europe. And we're certainly not at the end just yet of these worries. So the big question then, of course, is going to be about the property markets. It's something that is occupying the minds of people in the UK and Canada and Australia, because prices have been rising there for decades. And most particularly, London and parts of Canada and Australia were able to circumvent the credit crisis, and their property markets kept on moving higher. So they're very sensitive to interest rates. And it is more likely than not that we're moving towards a recession. And generally speaking, in a recession, yields will contract, interest rates will fall, and demand will take a hit. And it is more likely than not that that's exactly what we're going to see, is that the big surprise on the horizon is a demand hit. And I saw this, I've seen a couple of charts over the course of the last few days, looking at the margins and comparing the current PE with the PEs that we had. And I'm going to post this report tomorrow. I haven't looked through the entire thing yet, but I thought that this was an especially interesting chart for S&P earnings per share, because the consensus analyst estimates are that the record jump in earnings that we saw in 21 is going to proceed all the way through to 24. And that just seems to be a stretch. And if that's the case, then if we go back and look, let me see if I can find this scattergram. The median S&P valuations. Well, we have very high valuations for a small number of companies, reasonably low valuations for everything else. But there's certainly the potential here that we're going to see valuations contract. I'm afraid I have lost track of this chart, and we can see, I think, here more graphically. Back in February of 2019, the PE on the S&P 500 was 19. Now, we're not all that far away from where the price was then, but now the PE is 15.9. Now, if we are looking at the potential that we're going to see a full reversion back towards those levels, we've already seen prices coming back to those levels, and we've seen a lot of the big moves on the upside from the most speculative portion of the market fully unwind the surge in 2021. Isn't it reasonable to anticipate that earnings from corporations will also revert, and that we're more likely to see that earnings are not going to be sustainable, and they're not going to grow as quickly over the next 3 years as they have over the last 18 months. And in fact, they're more likely than not to contract back to levels that were already viewed as high in 2018 and 19. Now, if that's the case, then valuations are going to rise significantly, and that's going to cap the rebound potential in the absence of clear and sustained monetary accommodation. So we're not there yet. There's no real evidence that central banks want to aggressively cut interest rates. They're not going to do that until inflation starts to roll over and we do in fact get a demand shock. But that demand shock is likely. And it's unfortunately, it's probably already underway. And we're heading into earnings for the second quarter, really starting next week. So it's likely that we're going to have negative guidance, and that some of those enthusiastic earnings are going to start getting pegged back, which suggests that we're at least going to have an earnings recession, and then potentially also an economic recession. Because people are curtailing spending because of these high interest rates, and high yields are pushing up the margin rate for all speculative activity. It also suggests that as we see more bottoming activity in speculative sectors, that investors are pricing in the potential, at least, that the demand shock has already been priced in, and that yields will not rally very much further. So it is certainly a time to pay attention to where we might see opportunity. So gold was in mildly negative territory today, wasn't quite able to follow through on the bounce that we had yesterday. But then some of these Australian gold miners have been exceptionally oversold. And they are starting to bounce now and coming off of really exceptionally low levels. And the dollar might still be firm, but gold is appreciating in other currencies, or at least holding its value in other currencies. It was down $25 in Australian dollars in here today. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.